Margaret Goes Modern, Part 2 of 3.
The problem with going to the Modern Guild meeting is that she'll have to leave James alone at dinner, and there's something about that idea that unnerves Margaret. It's not that she's afraid he'll forget the stove is on and burn down the house. It's more the image of him eating by himself in front of the TV that makes Margaret hesitate. She imagines the television's glow reflected in his glasses, his mouth going slack between bites as he absorbs the action on the screen, and she can't help but think of her mother in the nursing home, sitting in a wheelchair as she ate lunch and watched soap operas, her chin speckled with spaghetti sauce. So when Jenny calls after lunch on Sunday to say she's going to come by later with the kids and will pick up something from Boston Market for dinner, Margaret asks if she would mind staying until 7:30 so she can attend the meeting. Of course, Jenny assures her. The kids would love to have extra time with Gramps. Margaret still marvels at her youngest child's willingness to please. Of course, Jenny is 45 now, married for 15 years, and has been a dutiful daughter since her own daughter was born 10 years ago. The scales fell from her eyes, James liked to joke, and verily it seemed as though they had. Well, nobody knew how hard it was to be a parent until they became one, and at least Jenny had the grace to admit how difficult she'd been and is doing her best to make up for it. Sometimes it's true that Margaret would like to make the sign of the cross over her daughter's head and say, "You are absolved of all wrongdoing. Stop apologizing." She wonders if Jenny has more to feel guilty about than Margaret realizes. The minivan pulls into the driveway at 4:30. When the back door slides open, the children bound out. "Mom said it takes 90 minutes to get here, but she was wrong," Cameron yells to Margaret, who's waiting on the front porch. "It took 95 minutes and 47 seconds. I timed it." Jenny, eyes on her phone, is slower out of the car. "Grammy can hear you, Cam. Turn the volume way down." She presses a button on her keychain and the van's hatch lifts open. "Do you have time to eat before you go, Mom? This food smells amazing." "I'll eat when I get back," Margaret tells her. She turns to Jenna, who is staring up into the branches of an oak tree. "What do you see up there, sweetie?"
"I thought I saw a raven," Jenna says, "which I think is a sign. There's a book I'm reading where if a raven shows up in a dream, it means something's going to happen. I think the raven in the tree means that Gramps is going to get better."
Margaret puts an arm around the girl and hugs her close. Nearly 10, Jenna is bookish and dreamy. In a recent phone conversation, she declared her belief that Hogwarts was a real place and that she was waiting for her letter of acceptance.
"I think the sorting hat would put me in Hufflepuff," she said, sounding disappointed but resigned.
"Oh, you might be surprised," Margaret had assured her. "You might find yourself in Gryffindor yet." "Kids, why don't you run inside and find Gramps? Ask him if he wants to eat now or wait until later." Jenny walks up to the porch, a bulging plastic bag in either hand.
"You should eat, Mom. There's chicken and potato salad. I'd be happy to fix a plate for you."
Margaret waves off the offer. "I'm not hungry. I'll get something later."
"You doing okay?" Jenny asks, her voice gentle, sympathetic. "You sounded a little tired on the phone earlier. Do you think it's time to hire someone?"
"Hire someone? For what?" Margaret asks, as though she doesn't know.
"To help with Dad. Give you a little break."
"But I don't need help with Dad. Your father doesn't need help, period. He's fine. It could be years before we need anything like that." Margaret opens the screen door and gestures for Jenny to go inside. "Really, Jenny, don't worry so much. There'll be time for worrying and bringing in nurses, but we're not there yet."
"Is it possible you're in denial, Mom?" Jenny asks as she walks into the kitchen and drops the bags of food on the counter.
You're a tough customer, we all know that. But sooner or later, you're going to have to admit that Dad is sick. Margaret resists the urge to say something sarcastic like, "Not as sick as I am of this conversation." She resists pulling up ancient history as a way of punishing Jenny for being a patronizing know-it-all. Instead, she says, as calmly as she can, "I'm fully aware of your father's medical condition, Jenny. I take him to all of his appointments. I confer with his doctors. I track his medications. Believe me, I know what's going on, and when it's time to get a home health worker, I will do just that. But for now, we're fine. I'm fine." "Okay, I get it," Jenny says in a tone of voice that suggests she thinks Margaret is delusional, but that perhaps it's best to change the topic. She reaches into one of the bags and pulls out a roll and a napkin. "At least eat a little. The meeting might go on longer than scheduled. You never know." Margaret takes the roll and bites into it. It's yeasty and soft, the sort of thing she doesn't usually allow herself. But today she gives in, if only to do one thing that will make Jenny happy. "Delicious," she says, her mouth full. "Don't let Dad eat all of them before the kids get some." Driving to the meeting, she resists the temptation to open the bag on the passenger seat and peek inside. She's not sure why she's brought the quilt tops with her, other than she likes them and wants Sheila to look at them and like them too. As she suspected, the quilt tops didn't take long to make. Margaret had the second one finished by Saturday afternoon. What she didn't expect was that she would be so pleased with the results. Such a simple design, but Margaret can't stop looking. She's so delighted by this pattern that isn't quite a pattern. The meeting is being held in the classroom at Thimble Pleasures. The tables have been folded up and four rows of chairs have been set out. It's a few minutes after 5 when Margaret arrives and most of the seats are taken. She finds a place to stand in the back, but Sheila comes up behind her and guides her to a chair in the last row. "You don't want to be on your feet the entire time," Sheila says, and Margaret supposes she's right. Taking a seat, she pushes her bag under the chair and turns her attention to the front, where a young woman who doesn't appear to be much older than Maggie is making announcements. To Margaret's surprise, the woman in the seat next to her leans over and whispers, "Hi, I'm Erica. I haven't seen you here before." Her arms are completely covered with tattoos, some primitive, others complicated and complex. Without thinking, Margaret says, "That's a lot of ink." Erica laughs. She has a broad face, pleasant, almost handsome, and short dyed black hair, shaved close on the sides. Holding out both arms, she nods. "Yeah, I've got a couple of sleeves here, don't I?" Sleeves. Margaret considers this as they turn their attention back to the front of the room where the young woman, the guild president, Margaret supposes, is now yielding the floor to a man who appears to be in his 30s, maybe even early 40s. He's balding, which makes it difficult for Margaret to pinpoint his age. She wonders if under his jacket he too has a sleeve of tattoos. She's at a loss as to why people do that to themselves, treat their skin as if it were a piece of paper, a canvas. She glances at Erica's arms. They look like comic books, the kind that Glenn used to read, with dark lords and heroic underdogs, the settings vaguely medieval. "Okay, as most of you know, I'm Steve, aka Quilt Guy," the man says as he connects a laptop to a projector. "Today we are going to talk about free motion quilting, with a focus on negative space. I decided to make a video because I knew it would thrill you to see me actually sewing instead of just talking about sewing." What follows is a 5-minute video with Steve, aka Quilt Guy, pontificating from behind his sewing machine. Negative space isn't just background space, he says to the camera. It's whatever space isn't occupied by design, and the quilting there really stands out. He holds up an unquilted square and then puts it under the needle. Margaret sits mesmerized as he moves the square around. Remember, everyone, feed dogs down, filling it with circles as small as dimes and as large as half dollars. Vary your size for visual interest. He demonstrates on other quilt squares, spirals and squares, straight lines sewn close together and then farther apart. When the video ends, Margaret turns to Erica and asks, I wonder if Sheila carries those gloves he was wearing with the little bumps on them. She usually does, Erica says, and she also carries the Supreme slider he was using. Have you ever tried that? Margaret shakes her head. I've never done any of my own quilting. Well, I hand quilted back when everyone did, but I've been quilting by check for at least 25 years. What's a Supreme slider? How about after the meeting, I show you everything you need to machine quilt, Erica offers. Sheila lets us shop even though the store's closed. Oh, I don't want to trouble you, Margaret says. Suddenly, she feels shy. She's not used to young women befriending her. Quite the opposite, really. Jenny hardly spoke to her for most of her 20s, and Susan was so busy working as an associate in a law firm that her weekly phone calls home never lasted more than 10 minutes. It's no trouble, Erica insists. I love getting people addicted to machine quilting. You'll thank me later. Well, if you're sure, Margaret says. And then, because she can't help herself, she asks, what does your mother think of your tattoos? Well, she was especially fond of this one. Erica points to the tattoo that takes up most of her left forearm, a woman warrior with a gold breastplate and a fierce expression. After all, it's her. That's your mother? Erica nods. She died last year of breast cancer. We thought she was going to kick cancer's butt, and she almost did. I got this tattoo as a way of encouraging her. Up to that point, she'd hated all of my tattoos, but this one she loved. My daughter Jenny has a tattoo on her hip, Margaret confides as Steve packs up his laptop and projector and the guild president returns to the lectern. A tiger. She doesn't know I know. Her sister told me. Do you mind? Erica asks. I mean, that your daughter has a tattoo. Margaret considers this. I used to. I don't understand why people get tattoos, really. But now I think what I really mind is that she never told me. I don't know why she would. She knows I wouldn't like it. But I wish we had that sort of relationship. The sort where you tell each other the truth about yourselves. That's a hard sort of relationship to come by, Erica says. The guild president has started to talk again, and Erica lowers her voice. Especially between mothers and daughters. It took my mother dying for me to tell her the truth about anything. Well, she knew about the tattoos. How could she not? Exactly, Erica whispers. Some things you just can't hide. The guild president clears her throat. Okay, unless somebody has anything else we need to discuss, it's time for show and tell, she announces. I really want to encourage newcomers to share if you've brought something. It's the best way I know to introduce yourself to the group, and we are an extremely appreciative audience. Erica looks at Margaret expectantly. Well, are you going up? I know you've got something in that bag you shoved under your chair. And just how do you know that? Margaret asks, stalling. She's a show-and-tell veteran, a woman used to appreciative applause and even the occasional gasp. But this is different. Just because she likes the quilt tops in her bag doesn't mean this crowd will. Maybe she's done modern all wrong. Have I misjudged? Erica asks, one eyebrow raised. Because I don't think I have. When Margaret doesn't answer, Erica continues, Come on, it'll be a great way to break the ice. Besides, I really want to see what you've made. Fine, Margaret says, pretending to be irritated, but secretly a little flattered by Erica's insistence. But if I'm booed off the stage... Honey, it's really not that kind of crowd, Erica says, raising her hand. Sonia, we have a volunteer right here. This is... Well, I don't actually know her name. Margaret Daniels, Margaret supplies, reaching under her chair to grab her bag. I'm a quilter. Hi, Margaret, the crowd responds in unison. Margaret makes her way up to the front of the room. I'm new to modern quilting, but not to quilt making. Still, if these are ridiculous, please let me know. I'm making them for my granddaughter. Sonia, the guild president, takes the first top as Margaret pulls it from the bag, unfurling it for the group to see. There are oohs and ahs, and somebody claps spontaneously. Love it, a voice calls out. Great colors. Sheila helped me work out the pattern, Margaret says, directing her remarks to Erica, who is beaming at her from her seat. My granddaughter Maggie, she's a freshman at William and Mary and smart as a whip. She saw a bedspread from Pottery Barn and thought I could make something similar to it. That's a million times better than Pottery Barn, a woman in the second row says. I find the Pottery Barn stuff depressing. Denise Schmidt designed a quilt for Pottery Barn, someone points out. Single girl? It's a really cool quilt. It's a really cool mass-produced quilt, the first woman replies, and a wave of voices rises up as a number of people begin to debate the point. Margaret has no idea who this Denise Schmidt person is, and now she's afraid she's committed some sort of faux pas by being inspired by a factory-made quilt. Is that not allowed in modern quilting? How do you plan on quilting it? Erica calls, her voice breaking through the chatter. Are you going to do it yourself? Margaret smiles. Ah, the dependable friend who steers the conversation back from chaos to its original course. I was hoping you'd tell me how, she says, and Erica gives her the thumbs up sign. The rest of the audience thinks she means she wants them to tell her how, and so the wave of voices rises again, this time with helpful suggestions for quilting patterns and thread choices. Margaret listens and nods, charmed by these young people who are doing their best to make her feel at home. This ends part 2 of Margaret Goes Modern. Tune in next week for part 3. Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.